If Reality Check Radio enriches your day and life, support us to keep bringing you the content, voices, perspectives, and dose of reality you won't get anywhere else. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate.
Welcome back to the dialogue with Dira de Boer on Reality Check Radio, where we discuss politics, power, and culture. You can text us your thoughts on 2057 and email your questions to inbox@realitycheck.radio. We are joined now by Scott Kennedy, who is the principal of Manukau Christian School, which is a private Christian school in South Auckland. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So how did you get into becoming a principal of a Christian school in South Auckland?
So funny story. My dad is he was actually a former principal of the school that I'm at. I was a foundation pupil at the school back in 1987. But having a dad who was a teacher, I decided that I would never be a teacher. And so I didn't actually end up being a teacher until I turned 30. I tried a few other things first, and then I decided that actually maybe teaching was a good thing for me. And I trained and got into it and loved it and haven't really looked back.
Well, it's a little bit dangerous for me to hear that since I'm turning 30 and I had somebody say the other day to me, you should become a teacher. No.
Well, come and talk to me.
Yeah, I've become a radio host instead. It's cool. So I saw in the Herald, we had a story a few months ago now, and I know you've been busy as well. It's passed on, but Manukau Christian School showed up as basically the number one Christian school one of the number one secondary schools in the country. They had a list of the top 10 schools. You've got 100% pass rate at university entrance level, along with, I think, one other school. So how did you achieve that to basically become one of the best performing schools in the country?
Yeah, there's a number of reasons for our success. We are actually a relatively new high school. So I started the high school with a couple of people in 2015 with six students. Our first full high school year was in 2019. So each year, so 2015, we had year nines, 2016, we had year nine and 10, and so on and so forth. Until 2019, we had a full year 9 to 13 high school. So we're relatively new to this game, but we had a different kind of model and an idea of what we wanted to achieve, and I think it's been successful. So this is actually the second year since starting that we've had 100% university entrance rate. So the Herald article you're talking about refers to the 2022 year, and 100% of our students who are leaving school left with university entrance that year. So some of the reasons I think that we are successful is culture. We're pretty academically focused. We see that as one of the prime reasons that we exist. Obviously, you're a Christian school, so that's foundational. But on top of that, we are academically focused, and we want to produce knowledgeable students who understand the world around them and who do well in what we'd consider the traditional subjects. We're also quite narrowly focused, given that we, you know, have a cohort a year, would say be 15 to 24 students. We can't field rugby teams or have a great kapa haka groups or orchestras and those kind of things. So we've decided that our niche is making sure that our students are able to head to university should they choose to do so. So I reckon that size factor is really important. We've got about 90 students in the high school, and any of the students who aren't doing so well or who we identify as struggling, and we all know them because every teacher in the high school knows all of the students because it's that small, we put mentorship in place. So they will be paired up with a teacher who will see them regularly, chat with them, how are you going, what can we do to help you, are there any ways that we can support you, and do you realise this is your target, this is what you need to get to ensure that you get university entrance. So we are targeting and trying to ensure that our students are getting university entrance. So when that is a goal and you're thinking about it all the time, you do tend to achieve it. We do have very dedicated staff in the high school. That they see what they're doing as missional. Like it's not just a job for them. They do see this as about working for the kingdom of God. And so very, very regularly in term three, when we're starting to prepare for the external examinations for our seniors, a large number of our high school teachers will offer free tutorials for the senior students and attempt, you know, to fill in some of the gaps. And they just really want to help the students get into university. I think our curriculum also helps. Cambridge is a fantastic curriculum. It's very knowledge-based. It's very clear about what you need to understand, what you need to know. And there's a lot of good support around that. And our PD, we actually teach teachers how to teach, which isn't something, maybe we'll touch on this later, but this is not something that I think is being done particularly well in teacher training. So we use this book called Teach Like a Champion, and it teaches specific techniques that you can implement in a classroom situation to become a better teacher. And that's a lot of our PD is around that. And we encourage our teachers to use these techniques. And we have an open door policy. So any teacher can observe any other teacher at any time and give them feedback, constructive feedback to improve their practice. And that applies to it applies to me. So any teacher in the school can come and watch me teach and go, and they do. You didn't notice that so-and-so was looking out the window, or you know, this kind of thing. So we're always thinking about how we can improve as teachers. Very relational approach as well. So a lot of our students, once they leave school, they can't stay away. They'll come back and visit us because of the relationships they have with their teachers that they've developed over that time. Again, that's probably partly to do with the small size that we have. And I think when you have got good relationships between students and their teachers, that's really helpful as well. And obviously, because we've got parental support, that is a huge part of our success as well. People pay money to stick their kids in our school, and they expect to see results. So I think that's huge.
Yeah, that was one of my questions, is a big part of the better quality, sort of maybe self-selective, in that if you're running a private school, a Christian school, parents are paying money for the school, are you actually maybe, you know, selecting out people who are not going to be performing as a you know, entire families, as a family unit that aren't cohesively doing that? And so do you think that maybe stable households and the ability to pay for good education, to really prioritize good education, makes them like a massive difference to the outcome?
Yeah, it totally does. It totally does. So there are different factors in the success of a student at school. And I think the largest component of that is the family background. So, you know, a child who comes from a home where mum and dad believe that education is important, and they want their child to succeed educationally, they're probably the kind of family that is going to have books in the home and that are going to read to their children and take them on activities in the weekends, like going to the museum or the zoo. They're the kind of parents who are going to have high expectations for their children and not accept failure. And if there is failure, they're going to put in place some strategies to deal with that, get some extra help, get some tutoring, or that kind of thing. So definitely parental influence is huge. Conversely, if a child comes from a family where, let's say, mum has a new boyfriend every other month, there's parties every night, child can't get to sleep because it's loud, there's a lot of drinking, there's hardly any books in the home, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that that's going to have an impact on education. And I think one of the things that we forget, or the government forgets, or that the teaching profession forgets, that this factor in education is huge. And you know, the Teaching Council is often talking about how do we remove inequity in education and this kind of thing. And the answer is you don't, because it arrives at school on day one, and there's nothing you can actually do about that distance between the students. The best thing you can do is deal with the inside school factors. So having said that there are outside school factors and that the family is a large one of those, there are also inside school factors that can reduce the gaps or exacerbate them. So I do think that yes, we are blessed by having students in our school who come from homes where their parents want them to succeed, but you can still look at the data from decile, or what used to be decile 10 schools, or all of the private schools and all of the state integrated schools, and you can still see differences in how those schools are achieving. A classic case is to look at Alwyn Poole's university entrance rates data and look at it, yeah, for the year 2022, and you'll see some decile 10 schools in there, or what was decile 10, I should say, achieving university entrance rates of less than 50%. Now, decile 10 is the highest decile. These children are coming from wealthy homes, and these schools are failing to get them to get university entrance. And when you look at those schools and know who's leading them and their woke ideology, it doesn't surprise you that the results are like that. So I would say the ideology of the school or the school leadership actually matters. So the closer the school's worldview aligns to the reality of the world as God has created it, the better off the children are going to be, which is why schools that are state integrated, which are largely Christian, tend to do better than those that are at state schools.
Yes, if I'm looking at the list here of the best performing schools, almost all of them are either private or state integrated schools with Christian backgrounds. And that seems to be the biggest indicator of a well-performing school, is does it have some kind of Christian background, even if it's effectively a state school. And yeah, there's only one actual state school in the top 10 list. Yeah, so we had Tim O'Connor from Auckland Grammar, the headmaster there, who was on interviewed by Paul Brennan 2 months ago. He appeared on a number of podcasts and had articles written in the newspapers where he described the state school system as in disarray, saying that they were headed towards rock bottom, the management behind the Ministry of Education was driving the education system into the ground. You may not be the right person to ask, since I guess you do a different system to the state system, NCEA, you're doing Cambridge, but I guess you can maybe tell us a little bit about like why you don't do Cambridge. Like, why do you not teach the state curriculum, the official New Zealand curriculum?
Yeah, so I don't have a particularly high opinion of the New Zealand curriculum. I would call it an almost contentless curriculum, which I remember when I was trained, it was said to be one of its strengths. So let me just give you a concrete example. So for instance, at level 3, which is year 5 and 6 level in school, in the maths strand of the New Zealand curriculum, there are 17 bullet-pointed, kind of broad, very vague objectives, right, to achieve over those 2 years. Now, in contrast, in Cambridge, you've got a stage 5 and stage 6, and there's over 100 objectives that you're trying to achieve, a lot more specific as well. So I think the difference between those two curriculums is one is a knowledge-rich, specific curriculum, and another is a contentless curriculum. And the idea, I think, with the New Zealand curriculum is, hey, we can have this curriculum and it can mold and fit into the different communities that we put it in. So, you know, they can choose what's going to work for their students, what's going to be relevant to them. So, but I think this is a horrible idea, because what ends up happening is, you know, kids in a poorer area are deprived of the riches of Western civilization. So we'll chuck out the Shakespeare because that's not going to be relevant to them, and we'll give them some gangster rap, music to study, right, because that's relevant to them. So I just do not rate the New Zealand curriculum. And it is, I think, producing people who just don't know stuff that they need to know to be successful. And it particularly disadvantages children who don't come from homes where that knowledge is going to be passed on to them and passing through reading of good books and just conversation with adults who know stuff. So yeah, I do not rate the New Zealand curriculum at all.
That's actually kind of shocking for me to hear. I've got my kids in a private school. It's not your school, but one where I can go into the classroom, had parent-teacher interviews recently, and the teacher can put down the you know, the 100-page, 200-page maths book in front. So this is the book we're going through. Like, here's everything listed out, all the problems and everything. And I can actually see, I can actually page through the material and be like, oh, yeah, that's great. They're covering important things. I can actually see what's happening. So if you're in one of these schools where NCA is being taught, then like the teacher can't actually put the curriculum in front of you. They kind of have to make it up as themselves. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and that's a really important point. So what you're getting really depends on how intelligent and educated the teacher is, how perhaps also how good the school support is around them. Yeah, Cambridge is similar. You know, I teach maths in Cambridge. I've taught it from year 9 to 13. And there'll be, you know, here's the key things that they need to know, and it's a curriculum and it's a booklet you print out, and then there's textbooks that align to that curriculum. So a new teacher comes in and can go, okay, this at base, if I can get the students to understand this, I've succeeded. So I think it gives a lot more support to newer, less experienced teachers. It's really helpful.
What is the philosophy behind the Christian education at the school? How's it different from secular education? You know, what does a teaching as subject, as a Christian subject, mean? And what, you know, what's the difference as well between just being a Christian school, like many of these state integrated schools perhaps have started off as Christian schools, but what's it to really focus on having a Christian curriculum as opposed to simply a secular one?
Well, lots in there. Yep. If I don't answer all those, just
I'm happy to take a chunk of that, and I'll repeat something. But I'm sorry, it's a very broad subject. I want to give you free rein there.
Yeah, love it. So, all education has a goal or a telos, and the goal depends on the worldview assumptions behind the person that's doing the educating. So different people have different goals. The goal of Christian education, in my mind, is to produce disciples of Jesus Christ. Jesus once said, a student's not above his teacher, but when he is fully trained, he'll become like his teacher. And so our goal as Christian teachers is to see that our children become conformed into the image of Christ. That's our goal. That ought to be, something like that ought to be the goal of Christian education. So I think that is in contrast to maybe a modernist perspective on Christian education, on education. A modernist might be saying something like, well, we want to produce economic units that can increase the GDP, so we're going to train them to have the skills that we require. Or a postmodern one might be, we're going to produce agents of social change who are going to speak out against the bigotry of society and rebel against their parents' conservative values or something like that, right? So every kind of education has a goal, and Christian education is about becoming a disciple of Christ. Now, for us at MCS, what we want to do is we want to produce courageous disciples of Christ who have minds that are trained to take the battle to the secularists. The secularists are those who hold cultural power today, and we want to produce people who are going to battle those ideas and dismantle them. We want to produce men and women who won't bow to the gods of the day, the alphabet gods. We don't want to produce Christians who will just stand by while an authoritarian, totalitarian government forces people to stay at home, wear masks, get vaccinated against their will to participate in society. We want to produce people or students who believe in smaller government, more freedom, more liberty. And we want to produce students who want to be a part of New Zealand turning back to Christ and turning away from this, I guess, woke path that we've taken. So that for me is in a nutshell what Christian education is. Curriculum, was that the other question you had?
Yes, I guess what's the difference between being a Christian school and having specifically a Christian curriculum? So every subject, how do you teach every subject as a Christian subject?
Yeah, so this is a really good question, because I would suggest that a lot of schools that we call Christian schools are probably not that much different to state schools. I kind of like to think of it a little bit in terms of ice cream. So, you know, let's say you have your vanilla ice cream and then you put your chocolate sprinkles on top or something like that. A lot of people see the education as the ice cream bit, and then you can put a flavor on top of it. And, you know, Christian education is about putting in the sprinkles of a bit of prayer and a devotional in the morning on top of your neutral education. But you might equally decide that you like to put sliced bananas on top, and that, you know, a Muslim education on top of the neutral kind of facts that we learn. But that's not how I see Christian education at all. I see it as infused in the ice cream. So the Christian approach comes out in everything. So there is a Christian way of thinking about gender and sexuality. There is a Christian way of thinking about politics and government. There is a Christian way of thinking about economics. So we use the Cambridge curriculum, which is not an explicitly Christian curriculum. I would argue that it's a knowledge-rich curriculum, and I think it's the fruit of a Christian worldview. So a lot of what we have in the West today is like fruit from our past Christian heritage. And it's kind of like we've cut the tree down and we want to keep the fruit. So I think recently, I don't know if you saw this, but Richard Dawkins was interviewed somewhere and he said he's decided he's a cultural Christian because he likes the fruit of Christianity, but he's rejected the root of Christianity. So I see something like the Cambridge curriculum, because it's a knowledge-based curriculum, it seeks to get children to know about the world that God has made. It's the fruit. And what we're doing is connecting that fruit to the root, the Christian faith, which is where that comes from. So we give the students the root that produces a curriculum like that. So part of that is a lot of training in the scriptures. So I'd say, it is pretty much a quarter of learning time in years 9 to 11 is in studying the scriptures and developing Christian worldview specifically. So we're really setting them up to think through everything Christianly. And then, some people would say, why are you devoting that much time to Bible study? Won't that have an impact on your results? No.
Right, you've got the answer. You've got the proof in the pudding. Yeah.
Two of our math students last year achieved top Cambridge IGCSE mathematics results in the June series of exams with top equal, and then one of our girls scored the top result in English. So I don't think it affects that. Additionally, each teacher that we have, we're very careful about who we employ, so they need to be able to understand their subject from a Christian perspective and be able to teach it from a Christian perspective. So it's really important the person who is delivering the curriculum understands their subject from a Christian worldview. So when we hire people, there's a process that we go through, and part of that is testing Christian worldview and getting to see whether that person actually understands their subject from a Christian worldview perspective.
Do you get a bit of, I guess, pushback from the media and other activists or agitators? I've seen a number of them target Christian schools. There have been a few, I guess, in particular, one particular high-profile person who's been trying to get Christian schools cancelled, or especially state-integrated ones. Are you more insulated from that as a private school, or do you suffer from some of these attacks as well sometimes?
We have suffered from attacks in the past, but so far, hopefully this interview doesn't
I'm going to get you in trouble now.
But no, generally not a problem. We try to just keep a low profile and do what we're doing, achieve good results.
I do remember your school showing up once. There was somebody who was outraged that you had a newsletter that said that Western civilization was the best or the greatest, and there were people who were offended at that. But you've said it again during this interview, so you know if that comes up as an issue again, you'll know why.
Yeah, well, I kind of like living in a free society where we have freedom of speech and that kind of thing. And those are the fruits of a Christian worldview, which has been seen in Western civilization. So, yeah, I think it's a really good thing. Yeah, so one incident, I don't know if you remember this, one of our teachers wore a MAGA hat to the BLM protest a few years ago. And so
Yeah, I remember that one, the one during the COVID lockdown where conveniently they had one type of protest that was allowed and no other kind of gatherings were allowed.
Yeah, well, I do think that COVID-19 is not able to spread during Black Lives Matter protests. There's something, I don't know, there's some kind of scientific theory there. But yeah, so we got slammed for that. What's ironic about this is, so the teacher involved got hauled up before the teaching council's disciplinary, I can't remember the exact terminology, but yeah, got hauled up before them for this because a whole lot of people complained about it.
People from outside, is it people making an on a sort of
yeah.
I mean, members of the public complaining to a board, not the school, not the parents, just random members of the public.
I think we had a couple of people who didn't think it was a wise thing to do, but I don't think anyone was super stressed out about it because they know that they know the teacher involved not a racist or anything like this. That's a ludicrous idea. But yeah, so something like that, you know, teaching council is interested in. But you know, I know for a fact that a friend's daughter was at school at the time, and they organised in the school a Black Lives Matter march around the school. So it's okay to be political inside school as long as you hold the current woke views that are acceptable. So there's no complaints about that. But a teacher who on his own time outside of school makes a political protester, no, he's conservative, so we can't have that.
Did that get resolved in a positive way for you, the complaints?
Yeah. So, I mean, there was no consequences for him, which is good. But, I mean, the consequence, I guess the process is the punishment, isn't it?
That's a very big problem that we have. People being put through these processes and that's done as a warning to other people, like, you better not do this because then you'll get put through the same thing.
That's right. Yeah.
So on this subject as well, and I guess on hiring teachers and so on, we had an announcement very recently from David Seymour that charter schools are going to return. And one of the things that I noticed in the charter schools announcements was a very key focus on basically saying charter schools will be able to hire whoever they want. And I thought, with what I know on private schools, that private schools don't actually have the freedom to hire whoever they want. They're actually more restricted in that sense. Are we going to end up in a situation with David Seymour's charter school model where these publicly funded charter schools will actually be like more free or have more freedom than private schools do? Or is it a different situation?
Yeah, good question. My reading on the announcement, I had a quick look into it, and it seemed to me that you could hire people, but they had to have limited authority to teach. And you had to, it seemed like there would be a certain number who have to be registered, and then you could fill these other teachers with LATs. So we can do that as private school. I think we probably
right.
do.
We haven't seen the legislation, obviously. So that's why there's a little bit of speculation going on from people who are looking at an announcement without having the actual legislation. But you know, so you do have a little bit of freedom there. Maybe they do end up just copying a system that private schools have access to rather than making them more free than private schools.
Yeah, I don't think they will be. I think they're going to have to meet fairly rigorous, seemingly rigorous criteria or targets that they agree to. They don't have to teach a state curriculum, which I think is a real bonus. And what else? Yeah, the targets thing. Yeah, and they can negotiate salary levels, I think, is the other thing, isn't it? So they
But private schools obviously have that already. And the biggest difference, I guess, is them being fully funded.
Yes.
And that's an interesting, I guess, proposition. And you would have had that, I guess, the first time charter schools were brought in, where you had private schools maybe looking at that model, but obviously it was the rug was pulled, and so I wonder if there's going to be a lot of caution looking at it this time. There's also a conversion of state schools into charter schools that they're looking at, which I guess from what you've described to me in your answers here, is that potentially could be very, very positive for them, but it's actually going to depend a lot on the ideological beliefs of the people who are running those state schools, right? And like you've mentioned, the outcomes are largely determined by what the the principals and the teachers believe, right? If they believe that they're teaching kids to just be social justice warriors, then it doesn't matter what type of school you've got. You could become a charter school and you're still not going to get good results.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many take up the opportunity that they've set up to 35 state schools could convert. I don't know. I know that a lot of people are pretty in the public system, or at least the teacher unions for sure, do not like the idea of private or charter schools. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. But I do welcome it, even though I'm not interested in charter schools myself. I think anything that weakens the public system and weakens the hold that the teacher unions and control of teacher unions must be welcomed, because they are one of the biggest hindrances to education in New Zealand.
And so as a principal, what are the biggest other policy changes that you could think of that this government could and should make to improve education in New Zealand for everyone?
Yeah. I don't know. I've got a whole lot of ideas, but I think the first principle is that government and intervention in education usually makes things worse. For instance, our per student funding has increased by something like 55% since 2009. And I wouldn't say that our output or the results that we're getting have increased since 2009.
No. In fact, Elwyn Poole, who you mentioned earlier, who's been interviewed by RCR as well, and I'd love to have him on the show sometime, he has basically documented the decline. Like, as the funding has gone up, the output from the education system has declined dramatically.
Yeah. I guess the second thing I would probably mention is that there needs to be some kind of external way of measuring performance of students in schools. So I think we used to have national standards. I think that was under the last national government. And I guess it's kind of a nice idea, but the way it was done probably didn't work, because each school decided and implemented, well, are our children achieving the standard? And, you know, I know stories of teachers whose principal said, thanks for your results, you know, on the standards, but we want you to go back and look at them again, because we're not really happy with how they've turned out. We want the things to move up a little bit. And this is a very real temptation as a teacher or an administrator of a school. If you're a teacher, you love your students, and you look at their answer on a test and go, oh, I know that they don't mean it quite like I know what they mean. I'll mark it right, or I'll round up their answer kind of thing. And obviously leaders want to make sure that they look good, so the school needs to be achieving. So I think there needs to be external ways of measuring success of a school. That's why something like Cambridge is great. At the end of the year as a teacher, we don't know what's going to be in the exam, because it's completely a secret. And so the kid goes in there, sits the exam, the teacher hasn't seen it, it's administered, and then it gets sent back to England for marking. We just have to hope that we've really given the students what they need to perform well in that situation. So, yeah, I think external measurement is really important. I'd say chuck out the New Zealand curriculum, because it's
just garbage. Again. Yep, from
yeah. So it's got this very silly idea that knowledge is irrelevant, you know, in the 21st century. I don't know if you've heard this, but a lot of people are talking about, well, you know, the internet's got all the knowledge we need, we just need people with skills and critical thinking, not understanding that your critical thinking and your skills rely on a really solid knowledge base. You don't go to the doctor or into surgery and think that, oh, it's okay for your surgeon to go, oh, shucks, how do I remove an appendix? Let me Google it. You actually want that knowledge to be embedded. Teacher standards would be another one, I'd say. So I think that the teacher standards, particularly in primary, are really, really bad. It's very interesting that to get into a teaching degree requires pretty much the lowest results. You know, it's one of the easiest degrees to get into at university. And I think, yeah, a lot of people enter teaching in primary as if it's a caring profession rather than an academic profession. So, and I think that puts off a lot of male teachers in primary as well, because they're more attracted to a kind of an academic, a competitive excellence kind of focus. And so I think we need more males in there. But yeah, I've been shocked when trying to fill positions to primary with how underqualified a lot of teachers are. So for instance, one of the things that we do when we're hiring someone is we will get them to sit a test. And the test requires some knowledge of up to year 8 maths and up to sort of year 8 English. And very often, qualified teachers will perform very, very poorly on this. They just won't know, particularly maths, that's much worse. They just don't know how to do stuff. And a lot of the questions that we put in this test for teachers, we put in as our year 9 entrance for our year 8 students, and our students often will do better than a lot of teachers who are applying for jobs. So I think that says a lot, to be honest.
Now, before we start to wrap this up a little bit, I would like to ask you why Christian parents should choose Christian schools, perhaps why churches should encourage Christian schooling as well, and if they, you know, if in your opinion, maybe not enough of that is happening. But I, in at least, and I ask this because of my own experience and with my wife and at playgroup and with her friends, so on. She's always encouraging the local Christian schools and encouraging parents to think about the Christian schools and talk about this at church. And sometimes it seems like there's just not enough interest from parents to think about Christian education, or from churches to even think about how important education is and how, you know, like you've mentioned, the ideological basis of the education system.
Yeah, this is huge. And it's really frustrating, actually. So a lot of Christians just, and it really comes down to leadership as well, I think. A lot of pastors are just worldview illiterate. They just don't get it. So I would say, hey, it's not whether your child is going to be indoctrinated with a religion. It's which religion are they going to be indoctrinated with? It's not whether, it's which religion. So our school, for instance, sees kids from non-Christian backgrounds who attend our school become Christians. They convert. But secular schools also see conversions, and they see conversions of children from Christian families. So Dr. Vodi Balcom, who was a pastor in the States, I think he's now a lecturer at African Christian University, and he once did a talk on this, and he quoted a stat that between 70 and late 80% of children raised in Christian homes, this is in the States, will leave their faith by the time they finish their first year of university. So pastors need to get with it. The Christian church is being decimated because we don't understand that education is about is a religious training. So Vodi Balcom said, we can't continue sending our children to Caesar to be educated and then be surprised when they come back as Romans. And that's exactly right. Unfortunately, the secularists have understood education a lot better than Christians. So one really interesting quote that I often pull out is this one: education is a weapon whose effects depend on who holds it in his hands and at whom it is aimed. Now, that's Joseph Stalin. And right now, the people who hold the weapon are our alphabet friends, and they're pointing that weapon at our children and at us. We don't want that. Hitler banned homeschooling in Nazi Germany, and he, in a famous speech in 1933, he said, when opponents declare to us that I'm not going to be on your side, he says, I don't care, because what are you? I've got your children. And when you die, they're going to be the next generation, and we've got the country. That's me paraphrasing. But so secularists and totalitarians, they understand the power of education, but Christians and Christian pastors particularly do not. And so our children end up being taken by the secularists, who don't often have that many children, and that's the only reason secularism continues to grow, is because it's stealing our children.
And I wonder if a lot of this is due to the education systems in the Western world, like New Zealand. They were set up by Christians. They were like, the schooling system was basically a Christian schooling system before, you know, it became a state system, and it slowly became less and less Christian. And so you've got generations of Christians who are like, you know, well, back in my day, you know, 40, 50 years ago, the school was all right. And like that attitude is taking a very long time to disappear. Yeah, now we even see many non-Christians who are looking at the state schooling system, who are looking at what the alphabet people are teaching, as you've mentioned, and they're panicking, sometimes even to a larger degree, and realizing like what's happening with the transgender movement, and their kids are being carved up, and all these horrible things are happening to everyone. And only now is everyone realizing how important education is, how important it is to control the education system. And that's why, going back to what you said, like right at the beginning, around the teachers' unions and controlling the education system, and what can be done to reduce the power of the teachers' unions, because it's their philosophy, their ideology that's very prevalent. And that's why the Labour Party continually promises to like undo any improvement in the education system, because that's what the teachers' unions want, because it's about, ultimately, it's just about ideological control. It's not about which ideology produces the best outcomes.
Yeah, yeah. I too see signs of hope. So I do the interviews for people seeking to enroll in our school, and we've got waiting lists at most levels. It's crazy. And when I talk to people who want to enroll their children, a lot of them are seeking to escape the disaster that is out there. They complain about, my child's just not learning anything. They just sit on their devices at school. There's just no teaching. But one of the really key complaints today is, I don't want my children having the rainbow stuff forced down their throats. So a lot of people are waking up, Christians are waking up. It's taken that to do it. But I think, yeah, we really need to encourage our pastors to see the ramifications of not supporting Christian education.
And I hope that the charter school system is going to be a lot more successful then, and we'll see a lot more Christian schools, maybe even new Christian charter schools, because I mean, there aren't that many private Christian schools here in Auckland, are there? I mean, I don't know the exact number, but there's only a handful of private Christian schools just in Auckland, right?
Yeah, there are a handful. I think a lot of them were set up in the 80s, I think. And then a lot of them became state integrated because financially, you know, you just receive a whole lot more money from the government. But I think that's a mistake. I do think, well, then you have to teach the New Zealand curriculum, and we've already talked about that. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've described it myself in the past in articles I've written. It's kind of a deal with the devil, kind of, where they signed into this and because you've given up this independence in the curriculum, because you basically have to accept everyone more or less. I'm not sure how much ability these integrated schools have to kind of gatekeep the schools themselves. But yeah, you see more and more of that kind of like fifth column starting to form inside the schools, and they slowly decay, like they become easier to attack. And that's why the private Christian schools that are left, I guess, like including yours and the ones that my family is involved in, are very deliberately remained private, because so that they would have that full control over the curriculum. And that means obviously that parents have to pay for that, and that's, we're paying double, right? Because we have to pay for the taxes and then pay for the education as well.
It is frustrating. But yeah, when you say the schools that are left, I'm very, very hopeful. I'd love to plant some more Christian schools, private Christian schools. I think that they are the way to go, and I do sense that there is a lot of desire for what we're offering out there.
Yeah, and often private schools are delivering for below, you know, the parents are paying for it and they're paying a lot of money, but actually the money that's going in per student is actually much less than that of state schools, and the outcomes are much better, and you know, simply because everyone cares and everyone's got a stake in the outcomes.
That's for sure.
But possibly, maybe my last question, unless I think of another one, but you talked about teachers before. Do you still have trouble getting teachers? You want to put a word out there for any teachers who might be listening and thinking of a career change to a Christian school? You know, maybe I'll give you an opportunity to make a little.
I'm always looking for teachers. The way that we've dealt with this in the past is it's not always easy to have someone on tap when you need them. So when I come across a person who I think will make a good teacher, if they've got a degree already, I'm very willing to pay for a 1-year graduate diploma, which gets them what they need to get into teaching. and then we bond them to our school for a couple of years to teach. So, yeah, if there's anyone out there who's interested in teaching, I'm very happy to spend time, meet with them, show them around the school, talk to them about our philosophy and what it looks like in practice, and talk to them about the teaching profession and what it could look like. Totally happy to do that.
I just thought of one last question here as well. New Zealand history. I do cover a lot of New Zealand history on my show. I kind of do a week in history. And the New Zealand curriculum has recently introduced sort of a New Zealand history segment where I'm guessing it's as bad as it sounds with the people who probably would have designed what's going to be taught in New Zealand history is the absolute worst. Your curriculum is from England. Like, well, how do you have a New Zealand history component? Like, I've noticed this as being something that all schools find very difficult to teach New Zealand history. I remember in high school, I got a little bit of New Zealand history, but nothing compared to what I know now. Like, I've become very interested in New Zealand history, but I only got, you know, a very small primer at school.
Mm. Yeah. So we do definitely do stuff in the primary school. It's on one of my to-do lists. I would like to introduce a short module on New Zealand history in the future into our high school. I'm currently reading, Ian Wishart's The Great Divide. And I want to read after that Ewan McQueen's book, what's that called? One Sun in the Sky?
One Sun in the Sky, yes.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to fill myself in. It's something I just haven't had the time to look at, but I want it to be a good representation of New Zealand history. So, and I think a lot that's out there is, you know, I guess the colonization bad, everything that was brought to New Zealand bad, missionaries bad. And yep. That obviously, I don't believe that at all. I don't think that's true to history. So yeah, but I want to have something that's helpful for our students to think through these things, because, I mean, we haven't really touched on Treaty of Waitangi stuff, but yeah, I mean, that's becoming more and more important. One of the things that you have to do to be a registered teacher in New Zealand, so when I sign off teachers and say that they can continue their registration, one of the things is the teacher has continued to develop and practice te reo me ngā tikanga Māori while practicing as a teacher, which I think means practicing the language and the cultural practices of Māori. Now, every teacher has to do this, which is just bizarre. Like, why does the physics teacher have to do this? Why does the mathematics teacher have to do this? What is it? What relevance does it have? We're in an education debacle. Our kids are failing, and that is one of the most important things that a teacher must have. So that's another example of the woke gatekeeping that exists in teaching.
Yeah, that's I've heard of that before as well, and it's crazy just to think that's the priority and how there's no real way to measure that or implement it in any sensible way, especially for most teachers, and nor should it really happen. And it's interesting to hear then from you as well, like, you're struggling with sort of the New Zealand history and finding out more about it, just as I am and as everyone else I talk to. I get a lot of questions usually from homeschoolers who ask me, hey, what do you recommend for New Zealand history? What books do you recommend? And I'm just working my way through it now, and unfortunately, there isn't very much. And as you said, a lot of it is biased against missionaries. We've got some interesting books about, you know, from missionaries and like reading their actual writings, because they left a lot of them. And unfortunately, you've got a very strong anti-Christian bias in New Zealand history. It can be very difficult to get through to the good stuff. And it would be great, and just throwing this out there, if somebody could develop a good New Zealand history curriculum from a Christian perspective in New Zealand, that would be very helpful to thousands, tens of thousands of us out there. So maybe that's a little project for someone to work on and get in touch with. All right. Well, that's basically it. If there's anything you'd like to say, Scott, you can throw it in there, but otherwise we'll wrap this up. And the audience, if you've come up with questions, you can text them to 2057, or you can email inbox@realitycheck.radio, and I'll get around to that. But we've just been talking to Scott Kennedy from Manukau Christian School, and I'm going to give him the last word if he'd like to have it, and then we'll move on.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and hopefully this is the first of many.
I hope so too. So thank you, Scott, and to the listeners, we will be right back after this break.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.